He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Well, no, this is actually The Hook. As you see down there in the bottom left, this is The Hook Podcast with Pete, Zayas, and myself. We'll do this every other Friday or so, depending on what is our schedules and how it's all looking and stuff like that. Pete, how you holding up?
Doing all right. You know, watching these conference finals, enjoying them, looking forward to the finals and, you know, trying to figure out where our Lakers are. It's hard seeing the team that kicked your team's butt get their butts kicked. Kind of makes you feel a little bit far away. How about you, man? How you holding up?
Yeah, that wasn't great. My theory on it is that, like, OKC looked like a buzzsaw all year. And my only concern was what it would look like if and when they took their bumps or lumps or whatever, and they took them against Denver, you know, beat the best player in the world. And from there, now they just kind of feel inevitable. The good news is, because of the CBA, they like can't be a dynasty. You know, it's going to get too expensive too quickly. So they're going to hope to draft well enough to keep on producing Chets and Hartensteins and Carusos and J-Dubs and stuff. So that's kind of the good news there that I'm looking at. That, like, I'm not normally, if I would see a team like the Thunder and how young they are and how clean their books are and how many assets they have, I'd be like, well, fuck, there goes the era. There goes the next decade. But the CBA isn't going to allow that. So I feel okay about it.
No, absolutely. And yeah, we're in that parody era, very reminiscent of the 1970s.
Yep. All right. So today on the show, and by the way, hit that subscribe button. If you guys are on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@Lakers Lounge to find the show there. You can check out Pete's stuff. LFR is, I still maintain, the smartest Lakers pod out there. He and Darius do their thing. So make sure you guys are checking that out. I'm sure you are if you guys are listening to this one. Today on the show, what we're going to be doing is drafting using only Lakers players. Pete and I are going to try to draft our own optimized modern 10-man rotation. And I say modern because I want to use, you know, essentially I texted Pete. I was like, hey, I don't want to have the same conversation again. I just can't do it. I can't do the, you know, well, which center should we do, Pete? You know, I can't do it quite that way anymore. At least not until there's some new development in the story, which I guess there technically was with New Orleans heading straight for, seems like a complete teardown rebuild. And maybe we'll touch on that over the course of the show too. Trey Murphy, come on down, please. But if, you know, essentially, once we get some new developments, once we get a little bit more clarity on what the Lakers may or may not be looking to do, then we'll revisit it and we'll have that same conversation with more information at our disposal. But this time, what we're going to do is use players who wore the Lakers uniform at the stage of their careers that they were at when they were Lakers, right? So you aren't going to get, like, I mean, LeBron was pretty damn good when he was a Laker, but you aren't going to get, like, Miami Heat LeBron when you draft him. Shaq was his most dominant that he was ever, that we'd ever seen any player, basically. So Shaq would be a pretty good draft choice here, right? So that's essentially what we're going to be doing with that. And again, it's 10-man rotations that Pete and I are both going to take. I have it listed here, so I will post the rosters after we're done, and you guys can tell us what you guys think of our teams and all of that good stuff. Pete, any questions before we get going?
Yeah. Are we doing like a snake draft, or are we going back and forth? What's the format?
Yeah. So I'm thinking,
and are we doing just like peak season, or does this have to be somebody who's was great for like 5 years on the team? Any parameters on that front? Anything about old players? Are we just time machining them into the modern era? No, you know, not benefit of.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? Like, how do we treat older players? Those are my questions.
The older player thing I hadn't quite thought of. I think we can allow for some modernization.
Okay.
Just you some know, like you, otherwise, yeah. It's not really fair. Otherwise, like Jerry West doesn't get selected, you know, like, so I honestly didn't even list anybody from those from that era.
We could assume that like Jerry West would shoot threes if he played today. You know what I mean?
Like George Gervin would be pretty good, you know, pretty good wing.
Right.
So I guess we could. Yeah, I might need to tweak my list here while we're on the air. But yeah. And then as far as like peak season that they were Lakers, right?
Okay.
Not peak season of their careers, but peak season that they were Lakers to help build out your team that way.
You got it.
All right. And yeah, we're going to do, I'm thinking Snake. This was my idea. So I'll let you choose. Would you rather pick first or would you rather get picks 2 and 3? I'll let you decide there.
I'll take 2 and 3.
Damn it. Well, shit. All right. I was thinking you would pick first. I'll go with Kobe.
Damn you, you mother.
Kobe's my first pick. And I think it's a good idea to basically explain our picks a little bit and why we're making this pick.
Okay.
To me, the reason I'm picking Kobe is he is one of a handful of players ever who carried the team's primary offensive burden from the perimeter standpoint and also defended the other team's
best. This is why he was going to be my first pick. Yeah. Is that you can find a lot of superstars throughout Lakers history that could put the ball in the hoop and can create shots for their teammates. There's only a handful of guys that could do it on both ends to that degree that, yeah, he can be your wing stopper as well. So, great pick.
Impact defense. Like, that's going to be something that, you know, because one thing I was noticing while I was listing players here is the Lakers point guards are it's a little shallow in that regard. So I'll let you get picks 2 and 3.
I'll take LeBron and Shaq for my two picks. And so LeBron will be my point guard, 2020 LeBron. I will take that. In that theme, I'm going to try and be bigger than you and beat you down. Shaq is one of those guys that as time goes by, I feel like he's somewhat underrated by history in that his peak and his dominant years were unlike anything I've ever seen as a Laker fan. And we've seen some great ones, but just his level of domination on the interior. I'm trying to build a big team that can kick your butt. So Shaq and Kobe, or I'm sorry, damn you. Shaq and LeBron is my 2 and 3 picks.
All right, so I have Kobe, Shaq, and LeBron off of the board.
So we do we just basically have two picks each from here on out?
Yeah, basically from now on. Yeah. So my next pick, I'm going to go Anthony Davis. Well, it doesn't matter. Anthony Davis and Luka are going to be my next two picks.
You bastard.
So my thinking here is same kind of thing. Pete, I want to be huge. Luka's going to be my point guard. I have Kobe next to him as like the point of attack dog that can just go out. And now it's kind of tough because there is no, like against your team specifically, there isn't anybody that like Kobe's pressure is going to really bother all that much because LeBron is pretty damn good. But against most teams, like if we're putting this team, whatever team that we're building up against the Oklahoma City Thunder or their all-time team or Boston Celtics and their all-time team, I like the idea that like both you and I are on the same page of have a giant point guard and you're going to, I'm sure you're going to select somebody who can defend also. LeBron can, you know, get after it defensively too. But yeah, I have Luka as my point guard. And the reason I'm picking AD here is because he gets better the better his teammates are. Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect like platform for Anthony Davis to be maximized.
He was going to be one of my next picks as well for exactly that reason of, and in the spirit of being, I can't be quite as big and dominant, especially defensively, as I would want to be with him. And so I get the next two picks here. This is going to be a tough one here. All right. One of my picks, I think, is the last of the true, like, unless there's somebody that skipping my mind right now, of mm-hmm. the true two-way superstars, which I think is the place to start, and that is Jerry West. Jerry West will start at that one spot. He was a five-time all-defensive player, along with being a 10-time all-NBA guy. One of the great steals and deflection guys, could really get out in transition. And so,
yeah,
give me West at one of those spots. And so, let's see here. I got West, LeBron, and Shaq.
And I think we should point out again that with West, he would shoot more threes,
mm-hmm.
and I think we could give him like a step up athletically, you know, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. eventually, like, he would, you know, with the benefit of weightlifting and stuff like that, you look at his frame from back when he was playing and he wasn't particularly swole or anything like that. I think with the benefit of some modern training and those things and modern ball handling drills and stuff like that, I think he would be extremely dynamic mm-hmm. as a shooting guard, point guard. A little short, not mm-hmm. the tallest guy, but still shooting guard, point guard, combo guard type of player next to LeBron. That's a pretty damn good shooting threat who was an absolute dogged defender too. You had to be back then.
Absolutely. It's funny, in going through my next pick, I'm struggling with this one a little bit because you've still got Kareem on the board, who's, mm-hmm. you know, top 2-3 Laker of all time. You've still got Wilt on the board, who is still, you know, great at the time. But I think I'm going to, let's see, I've got Shaq, LeBron, and West. This is tough.
Can we just pause a second, Pete, and marvel at the caliber of players that we're talking about in round fucking four?
Yeah, exactly. give me Powell at that four spot. Powell can space the floor well enough with Shaq and fit between LeBron at the three. So we'll do that.
So your picks. So your team right now, you have LeBron at the point and then West at shooting guard or vice versa, however you want to list them. You have small forward open still with Powell and Shaq as your front court. That's a big team.
Yeah, LeBron is probably guarding that three spot, you know.
So I'm actually going to take Wilt and move AD to the four because the year that they were in the bubble, he shot almost 40% from three in that run. And at, you know, at one point when he was a Laker, he was actually pretty damn good as a shooter. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you know, the other thing too, remember, we're building out rotations. So the fact that in some lineups I can have AD at the five, and then in some lineups or in this starting lineup, I'm going to have AD in Wilt Chamberlain, a modernized Wilt Chamberlain, you know, who would just absolutely grab every single rebound. He's the only player, I believe, who ever blocked the skyhook. Wilt is. So, you know, I like that. I like that you have those two guys as my rim protectors. And in this case, in Wilt's case, he ran like a gazelle, so he'd be a good rim runner too. So that's what I'm doing there at the center spot. And then for my next pick, I think I'm going to go. Ariza.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So,
for specialist off the board.
Yeah. Well, because my thinking there is I want to just be able to suffocate teams defensively, and Kobe and Ariza as my wing defenders and as my perimeter defenders. And then you have AD and Wilt just kind of, you know, like essentially, and this is part of what I was kind of thinking with this exercise is, you know, and eventually maybe we'll do this in a different way where it's like build your perfect Luka team. And to me, this is, this is what it would look like. This is like the version of what I want, what I think Luka would have the most success with. You have a secondary ball handler in Kobe who can also get after it defensively. You have your lob threats in AD and Wilt, who can play together or separately. And then you also have somebody like Ariza who just gets after it defensively and also spaces the floor. And that's kind of what I'm thinking there. So my quote unquote starting five here would be Luka, Kobe, Ariza, AD, and Wilt.
Love it. And along those same lines of a guy who could get after it defensively, who could space the floor, somebody who I think would be very good in this era and on this team, Eddie Jones would be my next pick.
Oh man,
at that two guard spot.
Philip Barnett. That's a Philip Barnett pick right there.
Shout out to Phil. Yeah, got West and Eddie in the backcourt defensively, two great defenders, LeBron at the three, Shaq and Powell at my four and five. I like the skill and defense of that group. And then to kind of pile on that defensive guard type of idea, give me Alex Caruso as my sixth
man. Ah, you motherfucker. Damn it. That pissed me off. I knew I was thinking about taking Caruso with my last pick. And I'm so annoyed that you did it. All right. So Caruso is your, you know, six man type. Eddie Jones is now off of the board. Pau is off the board too. Magic still on the board. Really interesting.
Wilt still on the board?
No, I took Wilt.
Kareem is still on the board.
Magic and Kareem on the board.
Magic and Kareem. Wow. I knew we were going to end up like at a part of this where it's like, shame on us for these guys not being drafted yet.
Yeah. It's almost like we needed another person drafting to make sure that those guys, because you can't have
that's what I'm saying. This is an impossible exercise to screw up. Like at the end of this, we're going to be like, your team's amazing. Your team's amazing. You know,
we did really good. We should be GMs. All right. Well, damn it. That Caruso pick shook me to my core, Pete. That hurt in a bad way. All right. So my sixth man is going to be my favorite sixth man of all time. It's going to be Odom. I like that Odom could come in and play with AD and could play with Wilt. And in some cases, if you really want to go super duper small, you could, I guess, technically go with Odom at the five. That'd be fascinating to see if any team would do that in this modern era that we're playing. So I have Odom is my sixth man. I still don't really have a true point guard on my team. That's kind of tough. I will go. I'm going to go Fisher.
Fish. All right.
Yeah. I'm going to go Fisher. Fun fact, Kobe never won a championship without Derek Fisher. So I'm just going to make sure that that's on the table.
There you go. All right. I am going to correct our sins and just make my layups and take Magic and Kareem.
Coming off of the bench for Pete on his team. I wonder how happy they'll be with that. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, we got some ego issues to sort through.
All right. So I have two more picks here and I will go Michael Cooper.
Good pick.
For one of them and George Gervin for the other one.
George Gervin?
Yeah. He's not taken, right?
Gervin didn't play with the Lakers.
No, hold on. Who am I thinking? The wing that was in the West years.
Elgin.
Why did I say George Gervin? Elgin Baylor is going to be my pick.
I'm right.
All right. Baylor.
Coop and Elgin. Nice. Those are good picks.
So you have two more picks and I have one more pick. And then we have our teams built.
Then we're done. All right. Cool. I am going to take Robert Horry with one of my picks.
That's a good one.
And my last player, I guess I'm going to have Magic, Kareem, and Worthy coming off of the bench for me. have the best three-point shooting team, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But we're going to get buckets in transition and at the rim.
All right. My final pick here is going to be... I think I'm going to go with Meta. I'm going to go with Artest.
All right.
Meta World Peace. All right. So our teams, as they are rounded out, you are starting Jerry West, Eddie Jones, LeBron James, Pau Gasol, and Shaq as your starting five.
I'm putting Magic in the starting lineup. I know I drafted West earlier, but...
Okay. So yeah. You're going to put him instead of West?
Yeah. They'd figure it out. Magic was... Like, if you saw Magic play live, yeah. No, Magic's starting.
But all yes. Right. So you have Magic, Eddie, LeBron, Pau, and Shaq. With Caruso coming off of your bench, Jerry West coming off of your bench, Kareem, Ori, and Worthy... rounding out your 10-man rotation. I have Luka, Kobe, Ariza, AD, and Wilt in my starting five with Odom, Fisher, Michael Cooper, Elgin Baylor, and Meta World Peace coming off of my bench. Man, that would be such a fascinating matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be so much fun to see. And by the way, this would be an absolute dogfight between these two teams. These two teams would be so physical.
Mm-hmm.
They would beat the crap out of each other. They would hate each other by the end of a 7-game series.
Yeah. Would be a lot of fun.
Any lessons do you think to take from like the game that the postseason that we're watching now? Was there anything specifically that you made sure to have on your roster while you were performing this exercise?
It was more about like Lakers history and the type of players we've had and haven't, like Kobe, for example, being the number one pick. I thought you hit the exact reason for it, you know, pretty well, is that he's one of the guys that could really do that on both ends. And then there are so many big men in Lakers history that you can kind of wait to draft them till later. Cause it's like, oh, I guess I'll take Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the seventh round.
That's tough.
Yeah, so it's less about like this. The one thing I'll say is that pretty much every team has one guy on it that you could be like, we're just going to give the ball to him every time. So much of postseason offense ends up becoming that target hunting, and there are a lot of switching and a lot of just playing through your best player. That, you know, that's something that's necessary on the perimeter, but we both went the big ball handler route. That's something it's interesting to see it like written out like that too. How many massive ball handlers Lakers have had between Magic, LeBron, Luka. These are three of the, like the jumbo initiators, like the best of all time.
Yeah. I've always said that the team with the best wing play historically tends to win win whatever series that they're in. And when there are outliers, you know, obviously there was an era that was dominated by bigs and all that stuff. And now we're in this weird playoff run where guards have kind of dictated success here. I think that's going to be more of an outlier than it is going to be the reality. But, you know, I think when you look at like why the Lakers have had such sustainable success, it's because they've had incredible wing play that just happened to bring the ball up the court. You know, Magic was a 6'9 wing with point guard skills. LeBron is a 6'8, 270 wing with point guard skills. Luka is in that same realm as well. So I'm really excited for what that winds up looking like moving forward as well. I want to go back to something you said, Pete, about the postseason. And I've really wanted to pick your brain about this, about how so often, you know, the offense whittles down or kind of de-evolutionizes back to, you know, rudimentary, your worst defender, my best creator in isolation, stuff like that. Why do you think that is? Because I, I don't know. I, and this is like the you know, Krantz's, you know, charting organized play kind of theory and put into practice here. Why do you think it does just become so simplified over the course of a postseason?
I think by far and away the number one factor is the prevalence of switching, the frequency with which teams are switching now. The whole point that the reason why you switch is to neutralize the screening game, and you can help, you know, take a lot of that stuff away. Now, there are things you can do with the screening game, back screens and Vergeau screens and using step up screens. There's all sorts of ways that you can manipulate a team from a switching standpoint, but that's really what it's best at, is neutralizing that. And what it's weakest at is, you know, you're going to be able to let the offense choose whichever defender they want to go up against. And so it's so target hunting at that point that also so much of running set plays, like there's not a broad enough variance. And you also have the tyranny of the 24-second clock. I always talk about this. That's really one of the main things. And so what I also think that there's a misunderstanding of the level of organization that exists, even in those when the ball is being held by one player going one-on-one while everyone is standing there. This is dribble drive motion offense. If you're really curious about this, look up the DDMO principles. Vance Wahlberg is one of the big proponents of this, where the way that the play, the active play works is you actually react off of the dribble penetration. So the most set play calls are built off of, okay, we're going to go screen for this guy over here. He's going to cut, right? But it's all based on, it's sort of football-esque in that you've got a quarterback waiting for the receiver to get open. And this is sort of the nature of the play that we're running. Whereas the dribble drive motion offense principles are, okay, after the guy starts his attack in going one-on-one, you're supposed to lift here. You're supposed to replace or read opposite is a big concept within DDMO principles. One of the principles is rules for corners is if I dribble toward you, that means I either want you to or if I dribble toward the basket, but it's in your direction. So say you're in the right corner and I drive to my right, hold your spot. If I dribble toward my right and you're in the left corner, lift up. If you're a big man and you're in the dunker spot and I drive along the baseline, you tee up, which means to go to right at the top of the restricted area. And there's all these principles that are built off of that, where I know it looks like these guys are just standing around watching, and they're supposed to, but they're supposed to react off of the dribble penetration. And
they're waiting to see where the guy goes.
There's a reason everyone plays this way, man. It's Brunson picking on the worst dude on Indiana that they can. It's Indiana picking on Brunson. It's really all of these series. There's a reason why you don't see a lot of set plays.
The reason I agree with all of that, I would build on top of that, over the course of seven games, that team knows the sets.
Yeah, you're not going to deceive anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. So you add that on top of it. And like the final part of it too is there is an aspect of why employ a LeBron James and call plays. You know, like why? If LeBron is going to feel this way, right? Where and I think Luka sometimes feels this way too. And this is what I think the Lakers need to work on the most this upcoming offseason, is those guys both feel that way, but the Lakers are going to be way better when they both work together in those moments where they both say, just give me the ball, give me a pick and roll, get the hell out of my way. And it's like one of those guys, if you're setting the screen in that pick and roll, now everybody is going to get out of your way, right? Because they have to account for LeBron in the short roll. They would have to account for Luka in the short roll. Kirk made a really good point when I talked to him this earlier this week, and we kind of reviewed, Kirk Henderson did, we reviewed Luka's season. And I asked him about Luka as the screener, because it doesn't seem to be something he particularly loves doing. And Kirk made the point, and built off of some reporting that Tim McMahon did for his book, that the Mavs just like never asked him to, and that the Mavs considered him, in his opinion, and again, based on this reporting, a lot less coachable than he actually is. And he pointed at the way that he was coached back when he was playing for Real Madrid, and how his coaches back then would lay into him and they would say, go do this, go do that. And eventually Luka would do those things. And, you know, one thing that I'm really looking for here with Luka and Redick having such a unique relationship going into Redick coaching him is Redick potentially having that opportunity to be like, hey man, mm-hmm. we need you to set a fucking screen and actually set it and give LeBron an advantage here. Cause that advantage might swing back in your favor. Mm-hmm. So that's something that, like, you know, and we've talked a lot about, like, you know, and we have a super comment here about a potential gap year and stuff like that. And the last time you and I spoke, it was about organic development and internal steps forward that the Lakers could take here. This is something that is, you know, meat left on the bone that would, I feel like, be completely unique that other teams have never had to guard.
Very much so. And that is part of, and I have some sympathy for this when you make a midseason trade like that, that yeah. this needs a training camp. It needs an off season about, oh, what if we try this? What if we do that? And sort of working through it, that I think this team can be smarter than other teams, that they can really use the combined offensive IQ of Luka and LeBron and Austin and to be able to create better opportunities, because they weren't nearly good enough on the offensive end relative to the talent that they had. And yeah. it was one of those things where I think that being the caliber of on-ball player where it's like, just give me the ball and get out of my way, and it doesn't matter who's guarding me. That's been Luka and LeBron for most of their lives. But I think you can get caught into some negative patterns if you do that. For example, not using Luka as a screen setter. Precisely the fact that he is so dangerous is like one of the aphorisms for shooters. For example, the old sayings for a shooter is, you want to get a shooter open, have him set a screen. Mm-hmm. Have him set a back screen, make good contact. They go follow the big on the roll to the rim. You pop out, you're wide open. This is something yeah. that works at really every level of basketball, and that you leave some meat on the bone. Just be like, ah, this guy will take care of it. It's also not as true for LeBron as it once was. And yeah. I would love to see a greater degree of intentionality of, like, pick on the small guys. You're a couple of 6'8" beefy ball handlers. Yeah. And we're always targeting the bigs like Rudy Gobert and the, you know, Al Horford out in space.
It drove me so crazy, that series.
Right. And it's like
Mike Conley's standing right there. Dante yeah. DiVincenzo is standing right there, guys.
And so there are all sorts of, we're talking about internal growth and internal improvement just within tactically things that you can be doing to really attack other teams that the Lakers weren't doing last year.
Yeah, I would also say, and by the way, that's a fair point. When I said George Gervin instead of Elgin Baylor, I should probably forfeit the pick, Daniel Carmichael, with that comment earlier. I think that's a fair point. I honestly, like, my
bad. You had me really, I was like, did Gervin have, yeah, see, Boba agrees.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened to me there. Well, part of it is I was so thrown off because we allowed the modernization for those players from the West and Wilt eras mm-hmm. that I didn't anticipate picking them. And then it was like, shit, I got to pick. Like, he has to get picked. Baylor has to get picked. He was the prototype of all mm-hmm. of the modern wings that we see nowadays. Mm-hmm. If you allow that guy to also be modernized, you're looking at an elite wing nowadays. Mm-hmm. He needs to be picked. And I'm like, fuck, I need to have him on my team. I need to have him on my team. And then just complete brain fart. So you're right. I shouldn't even get to have him on my team, Daniel, but there he is. I was also going to say, you know, the other part of this too that I wanted to hit on and ask you about as far as the way that you built out your team and the way that I built out my team, because I did a lot of the same stuff. A couple of years ago, or maybe even before like the 2019-2020 championship, I think these teams look a lot smaller. Mm. Like I think there's a chance that, you know, they aren't so beefy. Now it might just be, this is the history of players that the Lakers have and you got to make that work. And then we just so happen to have found out that size really does matter. And you know, that, I don't know. I'm curious for your thoughts on that.
It's funny when we have tried this small ball thing in various incarnations over the last couple of seasons, it's almost felt like a violation of our, like Lakers ancestors.
Yeah, pathos. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cause it was like Shaq and Kobe. Those were big ass teams. Cause it was them. And Rick Fox was a big physical three. Yeah. Robert, Derek Fisher is a physical guard. You go back to
Ron Harper,
Ron Harper, all those teams. You go back to Magic Johnson, as you said, was the one on those teams. And that's one of the things you asked me, like, is there anything to learn off of the draft based off of building around Luka? Is that I think this should be a 6'5" and up team next year. You don't have to. Austin should be the smallest player on the roster. I think that you can, because you've got the ball handling, usually you need those smaller players so that you could have somebody who could create a shot, who could get a guy open, who can knock down a jump shot. If you've got a big ball handler that's taking 10 threes a game and hitting them at 36-37%,
two of them.
You've got two of them, right?
Yeah.
Everybody, your guards could be 6'5", 3-and-D guys if necessary, you know? And so that is one of the things that you can get from that. But I honestly, Anthony, I think this is a historical thing with the Lakers. Every version of the Lakers I've seen that wins titles has been one of the biggest teams in the league.
I've joked that when the Lakers have gone small, it's like, and I'm at that age where I grew up wearing a certain type of clothing. I feel the most comfortable in a certain type of clothing. And if I try to dress a little too hipster, you can tell I'm not comfortable.
The uniform I'm supposed to wear.
You can just tell there are certain combinations of clothing that, like, when I'm walking around, I'm like, all right, yeah, this is what I'm comfortable wearing. And then this is if I buy myself a jacket that is a little bit younger looking, you can tell that I'm like, I look okay. I don't look too stupid, right? And that's essentially the Lakers going small the last few years. Where they're like, so we're supposed to play Austin at the five? Like, you know, like it was such a foreign concept to the organization and to, like, the franchise on a foundational level that we had no idea what to do with it. We had no idea how to execute it. We had no idea, like, what was necessary from it, what advantages to gain from it. We just went small for the sake of going small. So I am happy that, like, you know, by bringing in Luka, it's a kind of forced return to what the Lakers are comfortable with, the types of design roster wise that they kind of need to rely upon, because when the Lakers went small, it was ugly. It was not something that it was the Rob Pelinka double zipper jacket that everybody kind of sort of laughed at.
I love that. You know, it's funny, when I was with the team, one of the rules was that you don't post Pelinka in the videos I'd edit and things like that for the team. Is that it was just one of the rules. I had made a video where there was this great shot after they won the 2020 title of Pelinka is standing between LeBron and AD, and they're dapping each other up, congratulating each other. And Pelinka is, like, beaming with pride right in the middle. And I just kept it in for like a 2-second shot. And they were like, yeah, you got to take that out. People are sensitive about that. And so when they post Rob Pelinka in his tiny little jacket, the day that we trade for Luka, I was fucking crying, man. I was cracking up because he was like, yeah, out there looking like Zoolander, man. Like, oh, it was the funniest thing to me.
I just want to know why it zips from the bottom and from the top. Like, I'm just like, why? There's a gap between the zippers at the bottom and at the top. It doesn't make any sense to me. Wait, does that mean, could you technically confirm that LeBron wasn't to be put in post-loss
graphics? I think that they, in fact, I remember being in the meeting where they were like, guys, they found us out. And we were cracking up. We were cracking up that someone, like, took the time and noticed. Yeah. And it was one of those things. It was like, let that be a lesson. Ain't shit gonna slide. There was, like,
not
there was
on the one internet
play when Darvin was the coach where we'd posted something, but somebody gave a nasty look. It might have been LeBron to Darvin, like, mid play, and it made the video. Like, we were supposed to be in charge of all that. Like, one of the ones that I had let slip through was the infamous let's all everybody have fun.
No way.
The Rush one. I was busy that night, and it wasn't like, I'm not like the main person responsible for this, like I watched it and I had other stuff to do, and I was like, yeah, that was kind of weird, but I didn't like think, yeah, we should not let this go live. Fuck.
Oh my God. That's incredible. That's one of my favorite memes. Period.
No, I know. And I die a little on the inside every time I see it. Because I saw it before it went out and I should have said something, but I didn't say anything.
Damn. I don't, like, so had you said something, would it just not have cut to Rush?
Yeah, you would have never seen it. Had I said something, I'd be like, listen, for all the reasons that it did go viral and all of that. Yeah. Like, no, and there were several other things that we're not seeing I was part of the,
oh my goodness, that's incredible. All right, let's really quickly get to some of these super comments, and then we'll get everybody out of here to enjoy the rest of their Fridays. But first, most important clip of the show. Stop watching! All right, so the first star comment that we have here from JK Productions, who, by the way, Pete, came up with the nickname Keep Your Job, Rob.
Well done, Jason.
It's so good. All right, so I get the gap year thing, but both LeBron and Luka have the leverage to kill the Lakers' future. Keep his job, Rob, and budget genie have no leverage. The budget thing isn't as much of a concern to me. The budgetary limitations are now by way of, like, they are forced upon the Lakers by way of the new CBA. Mm-hmm. So, like the decision to keep Caruso or keep THT over Caruso when they could have just kept both, that was a basketball fuck up, and it was somewhat a budgetary fuck up. Mm-hmm. Now, if you see something like that happen, there's at least a feasible explanation. You got to get under the first apron. You can't go above the second apron. Da, da, da. So I'm not too worried about the budget genie stuff, but the notion of the, again, quote unquote gap year, while LeBron is on the team, while Luka is on the team, and the power that they hold over the franchise now makes that essentially impossible. How do you balance those two things?
I think that's very much true. And so I guess let's define, what does a gap year mean in the first place? I think that it's kind of going to be a gap year, whether the Lakers like it or not. Now, I would love for them to be able to land some great moves this summer and feel differently at the start of the season, but I think that there is a make an honest effort. And I think the way to do it is to try the best you can, to put the best team that you can out there this year. And if you acquire players, make them help short term and long term. Like,
yeah,
a defensive, athletic big man, whether LeBron's here or not, that's going to be helpful next to Luka. It's also helpful next year as well. And so all of the seventh man who can be a really good two-way wing that's not, you know, super high paid, but can be part of the crew that gets you to a title. Yep. Like, if you can get that guy this year, that's great, you know, and that can help you out this season too. And so that I agree with the general point that you can't just be like, oh, we have our pick this year, let's tank. No, that's not gonna, it's not gonna work that way. And but I do think that it's gonna be that kind of year, whether we like it or not, just because I think we need a couple of transaction cycles to build up a team around Luka. So I think that they can really make an honest effort, and the reality of the situation is what it is. But I do agree with that point that you can't go all the way in one direction.
To me, the makeup of the roster right now kind of lends itself to the notion of a gap year. To me, Pete, Unless it's the kind of trade that, like, you make and everybody gets angry on Twitter at the Lakers being able to make that trade, I would rather hold on to either the 31 or the 32 pick so that you can eventually combine it with more picks and get Luka's second best player down the road.
Yeah, no need to trade for Mr. Right now. Like, make sure it's Mr. Right.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, so the rather than moving the 31 or 32 pick, I would rather move a Rui, or I would even maybe rather move Reeves than the 31 or the 32 pick. Because again, by the time you are looking to move Reeves for that second best Luka player, Luka's 2A or 1A or whatever, he will be making 30 something, maybe, you know, $35 million a year. And he is then not as valuable as he would be right now. So, yeah, I'm I still think that there are moves that the Lakers could make and additions that the Lakers could bring to the roster without using that 31/32 pick. And I say 31/32, obviously, for clarification here, they can use either the 31 or the 32 pick, depending on which one the team that they're trading with prefers or for their own asset planning down the road. I would just leave both of those alone personally this summer. Desmond Smith asks us, AR and Maxey plus 2 second rounders for Kessler and Sexton. Would you do it? Well, Kessler is just not available to the Lakers. So like I would do that, but it's not something that Utah, I believe, is all that interested in doing. But how do you feel about
it? I probably wouldn't do that. I don't love the AR Luka fit long term, but I also wouldn't necessarily trade him for a center. But I like Kessler, not as much as everybody else seems to, but I do like Kessler, but I'd probably just hold on to Austin there.
Yeah, I have a theory on the Kessler infatuation. And it's that like the Lakers historically, there are not very many players that they, especially role players, that they're told you cannot have this guy.
But I want him.
Yeah. And I think everybody's just like, who the fuck are the Utah Jazz to tell us we can't have Walker Kessler? And like, I think it's driving people so crazy that they're thinking of him as like a modernized Wilt. And
he's just a very good player, though. I don't want to act like he's not good at, and he's young, right? He's going to continue to improve. So I don't want to act like it's baseless from a basketball perspective. Certainly not.
Yeah, I'm not going that far, but I do think the reason that we keep coming back to Kessler is because airheads like myself keep telling and everybody who's reporting on the situation keeps saying Kessler is not on the table for the Lakers. You know, he's just not, unless the Lakers are willing to completely overpay. All right, final super question here comes from Appetizers and Sushi, which sounds amazing.
That might be in my near future, actually.
I'm so hungry. It's 4:10. I'm starving. All right. Bron equals the only Laker on an all NBA team. This fan base hates him. We can't trust Rob to build a team and can't trust Genie to pay for it. AD is on a better team than Bron, and that's on the front office. Ooh. Is Anthony Davis on a better team than LeBron right now?
Might be it after the Cooper Flagg stuff settled in.
Yeah, I mean, they got lucky in that regard, right? Like, it's hard for me to like give credit to the Dallas Mavericks for getting Cooper Flagg. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a 1.8% chance. Like, that was not supposed to happen. But I also think that they are not better than the sum of their parts. Their parts are really good. You know, you look at that front court especially, and you're saying, like, wow, that's an overwhelming front court.
They have a very similar issue. They have a very similar issue that the Lakers have, just in different places, right? That trade was wildly imbalancing for their roster, just as it was for ours.
Yeah, and like, had Luka been healthy all year, he would be on an all-NBA team. So, like, I don't know that that's necessarily a fair point to me. I'm not saying this to, like, cape up for the Lakers, to be clear. And I do have real questions about Rob building out this team, because I think he underwhelmed in the LeBron and AD era. I don't think the Lakers accomplished enough while they had those two guys together. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it falls at Rob's feet for why they didn't accomplish enough in that era. So I totally understand kind of the point. I guess I just take a little bit of an issue on how you arrived there, you know? Mm-hmm. But hey, at the end of the day, all that matters is that final point here. And my comfort level with Rob executing this offseason and then maximizing Luka's tenure in general is not particularly high. I wish it was higher, but it's not very high.
It's not. I think they've got some strengths, this front office, but the overall, like, what do they stand for basketball wise? And some of the answers that we've gotten, I think it's kind of empty calories. There's a lot of, they've signed a lot of empty calories, bucket getters. If you look at the MLEs and the taxpayer MLEs and the type of players that have been available versus the type of players that they've signed in those spots, it's been a lot of guys, you know, that can put the ball in the hoop, but don't have just the difference between how they value Alex or valued Alex versus how they value Austin, I think.
Or THT,
right? It certainly tells a story, you know?
Yeah, the fact that they're so hung up on if Austin gets moved, it has to be for an all-star. And like, it's not, to me, if Austin gets moved, I don't care if that player has made an all-star team. There are plenty of really important basketball players who didn't make an all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't think Trey Murphy's ever going to make an all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think Trey Murphy is more impactful to basketball than Austin would be on this team.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what they're hung up on like, if we move this guy who was this great story and da-da-da-da, and we're only willing to do that for some guy who got in because of coach voting or a fan vote or something like, I don't know. I
don't know if the line's that rigid. You know what I mean? I think there's, it's somewhat of a semantic, like they're saying Austin, like, I guess theoretically we would trade Austin. You would have to trade us at a very, very good player. Cause we like Austin and he's a good player. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, if Trey Murphy's on the table locked up and signed, I think the Lakers would at least listen to that.
Yeah. I would hope they start that conversation.
Right.
You know, Pete, this has been a blast as always.
Always. Yeah.
This was a really fun, we have one final super comment here coming from Fear the Monk. I can see the Lakers, Luka and Sabonis perfect match. I do not think that's a perfect
I think you need a defensive player at the five.
Yeah. 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 DeAndre Ayton, do you want to start that conversation?
I've started that conversation already, and it's in my weaker moments. I can be talked into it, but
as always, you guys got to check out the LFR pod. We, by the way, we have a logo set up. I am putting on the finishing touches on the intro and outro for these episodes, but the Great Western Forum episodes are right around the corner. We are literally going to meet this week. Pete, you, mm-hmm. Jovan, and I are going to meet this week. To kind of really start planning out what those messages will look and sound like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, those are going to be some of the best podcasts about the Lakers that you're going to find anywhere. And I'm absolutely thrilled, to honestly honored to be included in the groups that they're going to be talking about the Lakers on those pods. But, anything that you want to plug before we get chatting?
Nah, man. It's fun doing this with you as always, man.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode and this week's episodes here of the Lounge, in this case, Hook Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. Have a great rest of your weekend and make somebody else's. And I will talk to you on Sunday.
Bye, everyone.